Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 10 of Upfront Podcast. We've hit double figures.
Woohoo!
So with me, as always, to celebrate is Ben Howdall.
Hello.
Hello, Ben. And we also have a special guest this week is Dan Eden.
Hi.
Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you guys?
We're very
not
good.
Too bad.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you for giving up your Sunday evening to come and chat to us.
And the social hours.
In the lovely British spring.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk to Dan about all sorts of stuff shortly, but a bit of housekeeping first. So this is episode 10, and we've decided what we're going to do after we get to episode 12. So 2 weeks from now, we'll be taking a short break. So I guess you could call the first 12 episodes season one.
Yep, series one.
And then we'll take maybe 2-3-ish weeks off, we haven't decided, and then we'll return with season two, which will be another 12 episodes. So the plan is roughly every 12 episodes-ish, we'll stop for a bit of a break before we interview every single developer and run out of people to talk to.
Yeah, we want to hit a peak point. We don't want to do a Friends and get to season 10, and it'd just be crap. So
yeah,
we'll stop before then.
And I'm going to find a new co-host for season 2.
Didn't make the second season.
No, you're being
really
cut.
Hate this. Like a cliffhanger at the end of season one, that'd be amazing.
Ben's critical condition.
I will Ben be back?
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, so yeah, that's it. So 12 episodes in, we'll be taking a short break from your ears, but then we'll return. So let's get on to talking to Dan. So Dan, for those who might not have heard of you before, just tell us about yourself.
Okay, well, I'm a designer and student coming from Manchester but studying in Nottingham at the moment. I created animate.css, which is a CSS animation library. And kind of in between that and kind of going around that kind of time, I've made a couple of other side projects and whatnot, just to keep me sane while I finish university. All while writing about sensitive topics and pissing people off.
We're all experts at pissing people off on this show.
I misjudged.
Ben just tweets sarcasm and it's never picked up as sarcasm, and then always, shit goes crazy.
It's always taken the wrong way.
So Dan, you mentioned Animate CSS, and that was the first thing on mine and Ben's list of things to talk to you about. So very briefly, what is animate.css?
Okay, well, when I was working at a company back in my hometown, I was creating myself a side project to keep me sane while I was doing that as well. And I found myself wanting to get some kind of, some delightful animations in there, and CSS animation was a relatively new thing, so I found myself learning about it and creating these kind of common animations that you find in desktop applications already and trying to recreate those for the web. And I was writing them over and over again for all the different browser prefixes, and I just thought there must be some kind of library of these things already, and kind of did some looking around, and there didn't seem to be one. So I thought I'd make one myself and put it out on the internet, and then suddenly loads of people started picking it up and using it, and it's since been used by Hipstamatic and Foursquare and EA Games and crazy names like that, so it's picked up pretty popular.
That's very cool.
It is very impressive. It's got something like 4,500 stars or whatever they're called on GitHub. Which must make it one of the most popular repositories, kind of, other than the massive kind of Rails and PHP and that kind of thing.
I think Bootstrap's got 40,000, but so it's kind of like hitting those kind of leagues of names and GitHub repos and stuff. So
yeah,
it's very impressive.
Yeah. So Bet, every time we have a guest on who has some library or side project, I always ask Ben if they've used the library or side project, and usually the answer is no. But Ben, have you used animate.css?
Animate, I mean, I hadn't really heard of Dan Eden before this podcast, so I know Dan, so that's okay. He knows that was a joke. I've used animate.css. It's great because CSS isn't particularly one of my I don't use it every day now. So when I do, I want to make it quick as possible and painless. So Animate CSS, yes, I have used a few times. It's very cool. It's like drag and drop, just add water CSS library that you can just chuck around. It's nice.
So I'll play the role of the person who hasn't used it because I haven't actually used it. So if you want to say you want to animate a button when it's clicked or something along those lines, is it a case of adding classes to that button?
So the whole library is built around classes. I tend to get a lot of emails from people who have absolutely no idea what they're doing with it. So what I say to them is if you want to animate an object right off the bat, all you need to do is give it the classes and include the CSS file. If you want to add some interactivity to it, though, have a button animate when it's clicked, then you're going to have to look into jQuery and adding classes when a button is clicked, that kind of thing. Yeah. It's fairly simple.
Awesome.
Just wrap it in.
So, we'll chuck a link into those show notes, as always.
Yeah.
So what was your approach around browser support? I presume it's just because it is just CSS. There's no JavaScript involved, right? It's just a CSS file, essentially.
Yeah.
You're just kind of limited to whatever CSS is supported in whichever browser.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I suppose the nice thing about CSS animations is, I suppose browser support isn't a be-all and end-all. So if you apply a class to something, then the animations just won't fire. It's not like site will fold up and melt into itself.
Right. Very much, you'd imagine the site doesn't depend on those animations either.
My biggest fear since launching it really was that people would see this as a way to like base entire websites around animations, but thankfully that doesn't seem to have happened. It's very much been a kind of just an extra bit of interactivity, a bit of delight to bring to the website. So
I mean, because you do see sites that the entire content rolls in from the site, and you think, oh god, what's going to happen if you're on IE8 and you're just seeing a grey screen or something? So that shock, that horror of that happening one day. Hopefully people use it with caution.
Dan, what have a few kind of people who are well known in the open source world have been posting about how they struggle to deal with GitHub and issues and pull requests for their projects. And just wondering kind of how, because presumably you've had a fair few people post issues and want to contribute and maybe post issues that aren't really issues and shouldn't be posted. How have you found kind of dealing with that side of thing?
Since I went back to university for my final year, I've been incredibly ruthless about GitHub issues and pull requests. And I think that that's important. So there are 11 issues there right now that are a few of them are long-running ones that I just simply haven't had the time to address yet. But most of them that I get questioning things like browser support, which is addressed on the website itself, and things like adding extra animations or addressing bugs with browsers. And so I usually categorize into three things. I go, okay, this is a cool feature. I'm going to put this on my to-do list, and I'll tell the person who's opened the issue about that. And then that list has just grown and grown and hasn't been looked at in years, but I try to ignore it as much as I can. Then there's the second type, which is issues with support and how to use it. And most of the time I just say, look, just drop me an email about this because this is the wrong place for it. And then finally, there are things like browser support and in terms of bugs. And I usually just say, this isn't my problem. This is WebKit's problem or Mozilla's problem, and you should file an issue with them about it. And yeah, that's usually how it goes.
So you've kind of got a system in place. I think the thing a lot of people say, I mean, I don't have a repository anywhere near popular enough to have to deal with any of this stuff. But a lot of people say, I think you've got to remember that although you put it on GitHub, it is also your project, and at the end of the day, it's your decision on if you know this feature is a good feature or not, rather than kind of having to blindly click yes to every pull request that comes in.
Yeah, and there have in fact been times when I've got pull requests and I've put yes in, and now I look back in them and go, I kind of wish I hadn't done that. Because it, you know, where, as soon as somebody else gets involved, then you lose some of that control and you, like, go in and think, okay, where have they missed out the browser prefixes for this animation, or where have they not followed the kind of the structure of the CSS that's already been set out by this project? So that can be kind of irritating, but you know, open source is all great and everything, and it's both a blessing and a curse to have something like that become so popular.
I saw you tweeted a link to Jacob Thornton's talk about open source.
Yeah.
The guy who co-created Bootstrap. And I think he said exactly what you just said. He kind of said, you create something every weekend and it's like a small puppy and it's all cuddly and it's all shiny and new. And then you release it out to the world and it becomes a great big Doberman sort of thing.
Yeah,
and it's completely out of your control and just kind of a bit of a burden in a way.
Yeah, I spent the whole time watching that talk just kind of nodding my head.
Like a dog, yeah.
Yeah, it's nowhere near the scale of Bootstrap, but I kind of, you know, I know that feel.
Yeah, I think I just saw someone else linked to Jeremy Ashkenas, who created Backbone. He said he has something crazy like 60 or 70 GitHub notifications a day. And wow. He kind of opens up his laptop or something and has to go through all of these issues on Backbone. And I think he co-created, he wrote Coffee Script. No,
he's done, you're right, CoffeeScript underscore and Backbone.
I mean, like, those three projects together are very much like in the wild open source projects. And I think he kind of snapped at a guy on an issue list and kind of sent a snarky, sarcastic response and then immediately apologized for it and kind of gave a bit of a run through of what a maintainer of an open source project goes through in terms of notifications, issues, and like it's like emailing the creator of a product directly asking for justification on why this was done, why that was done, and I can guess it can get a bit much at times.
Yeah, I certainly feel like a lot of people seem to forget exactly what they're like talking about. You know, they go to GitHub and complain about an issue, and then somewhere along the line they forgot to go, wait a minute, this guy made this thing for free, for all of us to use, and is maintaining it and supporting it and answering our questions and everything. And it's a shame that people tend to forget that with open source.
I think as well, you know, if you say, I think this feature is a good feature, and whoever creates it goes, I don't think so, then at the end of the day, just grab the repository yourself and go and add that, right? You know, that's the beauty of GitHub, is we can all, you know, if, say, I wanted a feature in Backbone and Jeremy Ashkenaz said that it shouldn't be a Backbone, I could easily grab Backbone and go and add it myself. It frustrates me when you see massive GitHub threads arguing about if feature X should be added to library Y, because it's just wasting time, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just go round and round in circles.
Yeah, I mean, SVGs has had like 3 issues raised on it in the last 6 months, and I'm kind of crippling under the pressure of that. So, no, it's true. Like, I mean, again, nowhere near the scale of like animating Bootstrap, but the first day I released it, a guy off Twitter, Jacob, he took it and made it much more amazing than me. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. I do something, someone takes it and makes it much better. So, yeah. It's awesome in a lot of ways. That's cool.
Yeah, I know we use GitHub at work for nearly everything, and obviously all those repositories are private, but I get, because of that and because we use pull requests for everything, I get at least 200 GitHub notifications a day from work, and they lose me enough. I can't imagine if I had to get home from work and then sit through another 200 about my Twitter Bootstrap library or something. I'd have to give up. So no, I do have great appreciation for those like yourself, Dan, who do have to deal with that. Hopefully one day I'll get there, because that's kind of my aim, even though I think I'll despise it when I'm there. So moving on, Dan, one thing you talk about quite a lot and have done quite a lot of, as you mentioned, is side projects. And one we noticed recently, I think, is called, am I right to say it's called Onward?
Yes.
Yes. Which was one you did as part of your way of learning Ruby, I think. So you can tell I did my research before the show. So just tell us about that, really. So you're a big fan of doing side projects. You have quite a lot of little websites and apps that you work on. Is that just something you've kind of always done in the evenings and kind of whilst you're at university?
I think my kind of desire to pursue side projects really started as I got more serious about web design and development as a proper career choice. I found myself needing to practice these things and didn't really have enough to do at work or university to really expose myself to those scenarios. So I thought, okay, well, I'll just pick up a side project and start working on that. And, all of my side projects have been a result of I've found myself needing something that a website could fix or an open source project could fix and just building it right off the bat. And I think that it's definitely helped me grow as a developer. Not so much design, just because, I don't know, it's definitely more of a development thing than design, but I certainly have a lot of value in the side projects that I've done.
I think side projects are a great way to learn something new. So I taught myself PHP. I was reading a book and it was like Echo Hello World, and I just got bored of that and I just went, right, I'm going to replace WordPress with my own really crude rubbish blogging system, but I'm going to build it myself in PHP. And it took me like 6 months and it was the worst blogging system you've ever seen in your life. But I taught myself PHP from it, right? And I've done that similarly with JavaScript and Ruby and all that stuff. I think there's nothing better than actually sitting down and going, right, I'm going to build this in Ruby or build this in. Or I'm going to build, instead of using a jQuery plugin this time, I'm going to build it myself. I think there's a lot of value in that. I mean, Upfront Podcast is a side project as well, really. And, you know, it seems to be going all right so far.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I think side projects, as well as being a kind of a way of teaching you something, it's kind of more from like a high level concept, as in like you said about reading a book and you kind of get bored with reading the theory. I find certainly in my sort of way of learning, as soon as you start building something, your accelerated learning just increases amazingly. So I spent 6 weeks or 7 weeks sitting looking at Backbone tutorials, and then within 2 days of just actually using it, I'd learned more than I had in that sort of 7 weeks. And things started to click so much more. So I think I've used, like you said, side projects as a way of kickstarting learning something and just sort of throwing yourself into it.
I think the best way to use books and tutorials is to ignore them until you need them.
Yeah.
So, especially PHP, I did the exact same thing. You know, I picked up a book on PHP programming and kind of flicked through it, and we'll get about halfway through and just go, I can't remember any of what I've read.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I just thought, fuck it, I'm just going to, like, open up a code editor and start writing PHP. And then every now and then I go, I don't really know how to do this. And then I would pick up the book and look for that bit of the book and then go, okay, great, I'm going to ignore you again.
Mm-hmm.
And
go
back to the code editor.
Definitely. And as you mentioned theory, Ben, I think the theory also is very important, but if you've got something in front of you on the screen you can apply it to, then obviously it becomes much easier to kind of understand and get your head around.
Yeah, I think what Dan just said kind of made me rethink my point slightly, in that those 7 weeks weren't a waste of time. As soon as you start building something, you start applying the knowledge that's just sat dormant in your subconscious. So what I've kind of done now is, as I've been using Backbone every day, I've gone back and looked at the same tutorials I tried to read before I'd even started building anything, and there's just a lot more fallen into place. So I think reading books and theory has to be, you have to apply it at the right time. I think building something, you learn much quicker what you need to learn, and it kind of guides you to what areas you need to work on. I don't think you can gather that from theory straight away.
I agreed.
Yeah.
Awesome, good.
But I do that even with, not with books, but with bookmarks. So I have a Pinboard account and there's something like 4,000 bookmarks in there. But when I'm stuck on something, maybe, I don't know, say you mentioned Batman, say I'm stuck on something with Backbone, often I'll remember that I've read something about that before, and I'll just go and find it. And that's why I make such an effort to skim and bookmark articles, even though I'm not perhaps using them immediately, is because I know it's something I might well, you know, wish I'd bookmarked 6 months down the road.
At the time you kind of first read it, it kind of flies over your head and you think, I just didn't go in at all.
Yeah.
But then you start needing it when you're building something and it's like, ah, okay, I see what that's about.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
I mean, you know, there is one particular jQuery book I would say is worth buying.
Definitely not beginning jQuery.
Apparently, that's a really good book, that book
is. I think the hackers have got hold of that now, so...
well, I had to mention my book, even if you had to ruin it. So, Dan, we tweeted a couple of times about having you on the show, and finish off, we've got 4 or 5 questions, which all are quite interesting, so I think we'll kind of divert onto those. So the first one is from Craig Smith, who asks, what's the one event or situation, good or bad, in your web design career that stands out most?
Oh,
that's quite a tricky question.
It is. I think I have 2, if that's okay.
Go on then, we'll let you off.
Okay, so the first one was back in late 2010. I got an email from an organizer at the Web Shapes conference in Helsinki. What am I talking about? It was the end of 2011, sorry. And they were asking if I was interested in going and talking. And at the time, you know, I had never even imagined myself talking about web design or anything. And so my immediate reaction, if I'd acted on my gut instincts, I would have immediately replied and said no. But I let it kind of sit in my inbox for a while and stew. And I kind of spoke to my friends and family about it, and they were all adamant that I should definitely take this up. If I didn't take this, then that's that, you know. What if that was as far as I could have gotten? And by accepting the opportunity, I kind of allowed myself to gain some more exposure and experience. And really what I was most afraid of was getting up on the stage and realizing that the people in the crowd knew a lot more about what I was talking about. even when I was up there, I was aware of that fact, but it just felt like, you know, this is what I've picked up. And if we can all kind of have the opportunity to get up and talk about the experiences that we've had and the things that we've learned along the way, then everyone can learn from that. And I think that was kind of like one of the biggest turning points for me. The other one was, not too long after that, I got an email from the companies that I'd kind of dreamt about working for a very long time, asking if I'd be interested in applying for a position there. At the time, I was just about to go into my final year at university, so I was so close to kind of saying, yes, I'm going to quit university and go and work over there and everything. But at the same time, there was a huge part of me that thought, you know, you've sunk nearly 20 grand into university. You can't just drop out now and put it all behind you. If you carry on learning, then you can really kind of take some real benefit from that. And I'm glad that I did.
Good answers. Ben, have you had any any bad events in your life that have stood out?
Episode 1, episode 2, episode 3.
Good answer.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was quite funny, actually, unlike any of your other jokes ever on this podcast.
The moral support I get from my co-host, those are good things. Is this a serious question? Are you actually interested? Because we're interested in Dan here, Jack.
Well, I suppose. Dan might be interested. We'll cut this bit out, but we'll just pretend to us.
Sure, Ben, everyone's listening. Yeah,
yeah, cut, no, yeah. This is a really important bit, Ben. Please talk for a bit.
So, do you want good or bad?
Either one event. You can only have one because Dan's been greedy and taken 2.
I can't have one. Okay. Well, I've got to say, the recent .NET award and nomination. So, yeah, I've got to say that. I mean, that's, you know, it's a nice bit of...
Shameless plug.
Yep.
Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks. Congratulations to you. And congratulations to you, Jack.
Thank you. Yeah, we've all been nominated.
I mean, you got nominated twice. Yeah. So, I don't know, you know, what you did to do that.
Bribes.
Bribes, sure. Yeah. So, yeah, hefty competition. But, yeah, I've got to say that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Fair enough. And no bad moments, so, yeah.
No bad moments at all.
Well, there's probably bits, but...
All right. Well, you've had your one, haven't you?
I'll go back to just quips now.
Yeah, so Dan, you mentioned at the end of your answer the degree, and that brings me on neatly to a question fry by a name. I'm going to apologise in advance. I'm going to attempt to pronounce it. Basim El-Khaki? Oh, that might be terrible. I'm really sorry if I've got that wrong. But it is the suitability of a university degree in the 21st century. Is it that important? And I think I'll add on the end, is it that important to be a web designer / developer? Because else that's a bit of a wide question. So Dan, what degree do you do, if you don't mind me asking?
It's a bit personal, but...
This is a very difficult question. It's one that I think I've been drafting a blog post about this for about 3 years now. The short answer would be that the biggest reason I haven't dropped out of university so far is because I want a degree so that I can work in the United States. That said, there is definitely a huge amount of merit having gone through the things that university puts you through, especially with a degree, because my degree is very broad. It kind of teaches you to be a jack of all trades, which may not be super beneficial if you're the kind of person that is used to education kind of leading you in a direction. But for me, it was perfect because it kind of introduced me to a whole variety of digital mediums. And I kind of, in my first year of university, I kind of spotted web design and thought, hey, this is something that I want to just carry on doing. And everything kind of led from there. So it's definitely a kind of worms, that subject.
Yeah. Ben, did you go to university?
No. A-levels was my highest official.
So did you go straight into a web development job from university then? From college.
I mean, I just said I didn't go to university, so... Yeah.
Right, well, I said the wrong word.
Okay, well, tell you, you didn't go to university, so...
I'm at university right now, but it's fine.
Awesome. Let's go. I went straight from A-levels, took a year out, in quotation marks, to basically work full-time at a supermarket and not do much else. And then kind of... I worked as an IT technician for a while, and that's where I kind of got asked to do an internal tool for the sales people, and that's where I learned PHP. So, no, I didn't get to university, and I kind of... I've always been very like, oh yeah, well obviously you don't need a university degree to, you know, do okay in the web industry. But recently I've been like, I think I would have liked that time to, that kind of space between education and getting a full-time job to maybe experiment with stuff, kind of work out what I wanted to do, instead of throwing myself straight into a full-time job, because it doesn't leave you much time to do other stuff, really.
Yeah. So I'm midway through my university degree, and so I do computer science, which I deliberately picked because on the course I'm doing there is no web content at all. So it's a lot more computer science theory and, if you like, terrible choice of phrase, but hardcore computer science.
Oh, wow.
That I hate that. You know what I mean, but I can't think of a better way to express it.
Which
purist.
Purist. Thank you, Dan. Cheers. And
neck beard issue.
That's one. And that's really good. I find it very difficult, which is good. Half of it, A, is I've had quite a lot of free time around that to write my blog and tweet and all that kind of stuff, which has really helped. And there's the whole getting a degree and go to America thing that Dan mentioned, if anyone's listening from the US, I'm keen to be out there at some point. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of given me opportunities that I would never have had. All the working in London stuff is part of my placement, as part of my degree. And just generally moving out of Cornwall, whereas Cornwall, for those who don't know, is down south in the UK and miles away from anywhere.
Not the next Silicon Valley then, no?
No, not quite. No. There's just tractors down there.
Tractors.
Yeah, but it got me out of Cornwall and up to Bath, which A, is a lovely city, and also is very much quite a good kind of web development kind of scene, and obviously much closer to kind of London, and I was able to go to more conferences because I was kind of more in the middle of the country, all that kind of thing. So yeah, for me, university has been really good, and I'll be starting my final year in a few months, and I'm very much looking forward to it. But like Dan said, there have been a couple of moments where I've kind of gone, I could go and apply for that job instead. But I think I'd be glad overall that I stuck it out.
But I think the question the listener asked was, how necessary is it? So I don't think we can be that objective about it. I mean, you two are at uni stroke finishing uni. I didn't go to university.
We may be a bit biased, I guess.
Well, yeah, but I don't think anyone can say. One, it's down to the individual and what you make of it. And two, who knows? You know, yeah. I don't think there's a... If I'd have gone back and I'd have known that I was going to do web stuff at 16 instead of 19, then I probably would have gone to university. But I'm not going to give up what I've sort of got over the last 3 years or so of working full time.
I think it's very much case by case basis, right? Person by person.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say go for it or don't. Those are two options.
So we've cleared that one up.
Yep.
Really helpful answer. I definitely think that my the biggest gain that I've had from university is the placement year, because without that, I would have gone into my final year with absolutely no idea kind of how serious this whole university thing actually was. You know, when I was in my first 2 years, I was kind of still in the whole college mindset, and that wasn't particularly helpful. And then to go into a full-time job in my third was a jarring change, but one that I needed and one that I really did enjoy. And going back into my final year, I think that it's helped a lot, because it's made me think about everything that I do in a much more business-oriented way. So I can't imagine having done my final year without doing a placement and feel the same way that I do now about kind of my projects and the things that I'm working on both in and outside of university.
Being currently on my placement, I'd say that I can't talk about my final year, but all the stuff you mentioned about placement, I completely agree with. I did kind of ghost through first year a bit, which really, in hindsight, I shouldn't have. But yeah, this, I think, will really stand me in good stead for final year, but we'll see.
Yeah.
So one last question from Anthony Killeen, Mr. Q West, who asked, Dan, this is very much a question for you. I'm not sure me and Ben are going to be good at this one. What are some particularly good resources or books about the theory of design?
Oh, God, how long have we got?
Your top few or couple or however many you can think of, really, you know.
I can give you my top three.
Okay, that's so good.
In no particular order, you should definitely read Frank Shimero's The Shape of Design, The Vignelli Canon by Massimo Vignelli, and Joseph Muller Brockman's Grid Systems in Graphic Design.
Awesome.
Those are my go-tos.
Good job, and we'll link to all of those in the show notes. So yeah, I think that rounds us up. Ben, have I forgotten anything?
No, you've been grand.
Yeah, plug my book.
Plug the book, mention the show notes, dissed me a little bit, pandered to the guest.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you've done great.
Oh, dearie me. I can't wait for our break after 12 episodes. Jeez.
I'm not coming back. I'm not recurring character.
No, me either. Dan, do you want to be a co-host?
Do you fancy a job?
So again, thank you very much to our guest Dan Eden for coming on a Sunday evening to chat to us. I'm much appreciated.
Thank you guys. It's been fun.
Awesome.
Good. And yeah, that was a really fun show. Hopefully people listening get a lot out of it. So what's left to say is it's goodbye from Ben.
Goodbye, Jack.
Goodbye, Ben. And we will be in your ears this time next week. we'll catch you then. So thank you once again for listening. We are at Upfront Podcast on Twitter. And we will see you soon. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.